This episode of Intelligent Medicine is brought to you by the Protocol for Life Balance product line at my online dispensary. Protocol for Life Balance offers a wide range of professional-grade products using ingredients backed by strong scientific research. Among them, three stand out, which help support gastric health and offer digestive support. GI Guard AM, GI Guard PM, and Peppermint Oil GI. Numerous clinical studies have demonstrated that these products can help to support GI health and promote gastric comfort. They help maintain the integrity of the stomach lining and its proper immune responses to the typically harsh gastric environment. Their ingredients are backed by solid scientific data. They're only available from healthcare practitioners, but they're available to you at drhoffman.com/protocol for life balance. That's drhoffman.com/protocol for life balance.
Welcome to Intelligent Medicine. I'm your host, Layla Mudin. I am a registered dietitian nutritionist. I am a certified dietitian nutritionist. I have a master's degree in nutrition and exercise, and I maintain a private practice as well as a practice with Dr. Ronald Hoffman here in Midtown Manhattan at 635 Madison Avenue, 14th floor. If you'd like to make an appointment, call this number and speak to Grimaldi. She'll set you up. 212-779-1744. That's 212-779-1744. I appreciate all of your questions, topics of interest. Please email them to me to radioprogram@AOL.com. That's radioprogram@AOL.com. Going to tackle one of your questions today. This email comes from Cheryl. Cheryl writes, "What is your opinion of vegan cheese? Does it have any nutritional value? I follow the Whole 30 diet, but would like a cheese substitute to use in my omelets. Would a vegan cheese like the brand Follow Your Heart, which contains coconut oil and potato starch, be okay to use in my diet? Thank you, Cheryl." Cheryl, this is a great question, and thank you for emailing me. If this Follow Your Heart brand, if the cheese you're choosing contains coconut oil and potato starch, both of those are allowed on a Whole 30 diet. And I went along to the website to look at some of the cheeses that they offer and things like that. And as long as you don't have ingredients like possibly a modified food starch, which may be a gluten source, which may be problematic for people, not necessarily for you, Cheryl, but for anybody, for everybody who's listening. Sometimes they have canola oil in their formulations of cheeses. It's not a great oil, although there are many that are much worse, let me tell you, like cottonseed oil or something like that. Natural flavors, which may be a source of MSG because yeast extract may be included in some ingredients of cheeses, and yeast extract may be where MSG is found, monosodium glutamate. It's a source of that. And also, you want to be careful. You want to look at things. You want to look for things like sodium phosphate. Phosphates. You don't want to have those in your foods. Not great for the kidneys long term. We're finding more and more phosphates in foods like these kind of products, or like mock cheese products, or luncheon meats, or processed meats like a bacon or a deli ham or something like that. We're finding phosphates there. You want to be careful also of carrageenan in your alternative cheese products, your non-dairy cheese products. So, not just sodium phosphate, by the way, there's calcium phosphate, there's all kinds of things. And watch for that, and certainly watch if you have any reaction to any of these things, because often the product that you need the substitution for, if you're avoiding dairy, for example, and you're looking for cheeses, non-dairy cheeses, Yeah, you want to make sure they don't have those ingredients, but I think a modified potato or a modified cornstarch is pretty innocuous, a potato starch. I see also they've got sea salt. They've got natural flavor from plant sources. They have beta carotene for color, which is a much better idea than color lakes like yellows and reds with numbers and all of that kind of thing. Coconut oil would certainly be fine. I was looking at American cheese there by Follow Your Heart. Those ingredients aren't bad at all. And I see a lot more of the same of those ingredients in like a pepper jack cheese, in a smoked Gouda. Hey, this isn't bad. Cheryl, thanks for bringing this to my attention. For those of you who miss your cheese but can't have dairy for various reasons, whether it's lactose intolerance or whether you choose not to have dairy or you have an autoimmune condition, which would kind of dictate that you eliminate anything from animal milk, which is dairy, and especially cow's milk and cow's milk cheeses, this may be a good source. Why not? And I'm all for people being happy with the food they choose to eat, and especially if it tastes good and it's good for them and the ingredients are good. Why not? Cheryl, thank you very, very much for your question. And again, for those of you who'd like to email me, it's radioprogram@AOL.com. All right. Have you ever wondered how we determine what your ideal body weight should be? Well, go back to, you know, I remember my days of undergrad in my dietetics courses and my nutrition courses. Like, how do we arrive at an ideal body weight for a person? How do we know? I mean, we're not machines. If we're all of a particular height, we shouldn't all weigh the same. Certainly, there would be a discrepancy between men and women, right? But even beyond that, amongst women, are all women who are of the stature of 5 feet, 4 inches tall, should they all be at the same weight of 120 pounds? And I'm going to tell you in a moment how I got to that number of 120 pounds. And should all men who are 5 feet, 10 inches in height, should every last one of them be 166 pounds? No, and I will tell you in a moment how I arrived at 166 pounds. The rules for men and women are different because of our hormones, our physiology, all of that. So here's the rule for women. Let me start there. How do we determine what a healthy weight would be? For the first 5 feet of stature, for women, for the first 5 feet of height, you get 100 pounds. Okay, so 5 feet of stature, you get 100 pounds. For every inch thereafter above 5 feet, you get 5 pounds. So a woman who is 5'4", 120 pounds, right? You've got the initial 100 pounds at 5 feet, and for every inch thereafter, you get 5 pounds. So 4 inches times 5 pounds, you've got 20 pounds, so 120 pounds. That's how we arrive at that. The rule for men, a little different. For the first 5 feet of height for men, the first 5 feet of stature for men is 106 pounds, as opposed to that 100 pounds for women. So for men, at 5 feet is 106 pounds. And for every inch above the 5 feet, they get 6 pounds. As opposed to 5 pounds. So for a man who is 5'10", they've got 106 pounds. And then for the 10 inches above, for the 5'10", 10 inches times 6 pounds per inch, 60 pounds. So that equals 166 pounds for a man of 5'10". So my original question, are all men at 5'10" destined to be 166? Is that perfect? Are all women of 5'4", should they all be 120? No, of course not. We have to account for frame size. What do I mean? You look at three different women who are all the same height, say 5'4", That's the example I'm using here. You might find some women who are kind of very slender looking. They're kind of thin. They're kind of lanky. Their wrists are slimmer than the other two women. One of the women has a thicker wrist. You look at the breadth of their shoulders. Look at the span of their shoulders. Remember, they're all at the same height, right? Excuse me. They're all at the same height. Little sip of water here. Thank you. They're all at the same height, but you're looking at the breadth of their shoulders. You're looking at kind of the size of their wrists, and that's how you can kind of eyeball. There is a formula. I won't get into that here. It's not that important. You look at them and you say, okay, this woman is a small frame. She's kind of slight that way. And this woman at 5'4", she probably doesn't weigh 120 pounds. She may weigh 115, right? And now you look at the so-called large frame woman, and you're looking, she's got a bigger shoulder span, the width of her shoulders, the breadth of her shoulders is really what I'm talking about. She's got a thicker wrist, right? She may look a little more, quote, big bone to you, right? At 5'4", she's probably not standing at 120 pounds. She may be 132, 135. So this is how we take body frame into account. So according to your frame, really, we say for a woman of 5'4", who ideally should be 120 pounds, then we say plus or minus 10% for frame size, plus or minus 10%. So minus 10% of 120, that could go down to 108 pounds for that small framed woman. She could be 5'4 and 108 pounds, and that's a fine weight for her because she has a small frame. The medium frame woman, that Goldilocks woman, may be at 120. She may be at 117. She may be at 123, right? And then for the large framed woman who's got the shoulder breadth, she's got the bigger wrist, she's looking bigger boned, right? She may be 130, you know, the plus 10%, add 10% to that 120 pounds. We're adding 12 pounds to her, right? 132 pounds. So the range for that 5'4 woman, when we take it across the span of small frame, medium frame, and large frame, the span of weight then is between 108 pounds and 132 pounds. The same thing for the man. A 5'10 man who is a small frame, for example, you minus 10% from 166, you minus 16 pounds. So 152 would be the small frame man. You add 16 pounds, you add 10% to 166 pounds for the large frame man, bringing him to a higher weight, right? So if you add 16 pounds to the man with the large frame, you're really talking about 182 pounds or so. So 156 to 182 pounds is the span of weight for a man of 5 feet 10 inch in height, and depending on their frame size. That's how we kind of come to that determination. So again, it's not a one height fits all. That's what your weight should be. We're not robot. We're not machinery. You know, we're human beings. We have a water table, a hydration status. Our organs and our muscles and our tissues and our bones differ in size and in weight. All of that needs to be taken into account. So that's how we determine an ideal weight. We take all of that into consideration. Another thing I want to bring to your attention here is a leaky gut a cardiovascular risk factor? You've heard us talk about leaky gut often here on Intelligent Medicine, between Dr. Hoffman and myself, all the people he's interviewed, and the importance of a leaky gut being really a prerequisite to major chronic conditions, autoimmune diseases, all of that. But now the question is a leaky gut a cardiovascular risk factor, right? Leaky gut has gotten a lot of attention in the last many years for its role in chronic conditions like inflammatory bowel disease, irritable bowel syndrome, even diabetes. But is there a connection between leaky gut and the heart? And I remembered this from last year's Integrative Healthcare Conference that I went to, which was very interesting. And I listened to cardiologist Dr. Jack Wolfson. He thinks so. In fact, he thinks all roads that lead to chronic disease more or less begin in the gut. When we talk about leaky gut, we're talking about intestinal permeability. It's a condition in which the tight junctions that regulate what goes in and out of the gut have been compromised, right? Many integrative medicine experts hold that this permits toxic or allergenic substances to cross from the gut lumen into the bloodstream where they don't belong, setting off a cascade of inflammatory events. You know that about leaky gut. And most integrative medicine doctors, including Dr. Wolfson, acknowledge that the science around leaky gut is young. Research on the connection between leaky gut and the heart is in its infancy. Still, there have been some powerful findings in the last decade that warrant serious attention. And this is what Dr. Wolfson brings to the fore. He suggested that people with intestinal permeability, bacteria within the gut, or in some cases, bacterial endotoxins, enter the bloodstream and are then able to infiltrate the epicardium and become associated with endothelial plaques. It can infiltrate the epicardium, the region around the heart, and become associated with endothelial plaques. Those are the plaques in our coronary arteries. There's also a theory that leaky gut contributes to heart disease by inducing inflammation and weakening the stability of plaques within the coronary arteries. This is important because plaque stability or instability is a major factor in determining risk of a cardiovascular event. In 2016, a study published in the Journal of the American College of Cardiology, researchers discovered that patients who have chronic heart failure are also frequently found to have increased intestinal permeability compared to healthy people without chronic heart failure. In the study, a multi-center team of Italian researchers analyzed 60 well-nourished patients in stable condition with mild or moderate to severe chronic heart failure and matched them with 20 healthy control subjects. In all subjects, they measured the presence and development in the feces of bacteria and fungi. We're talking about a candida species. They assessed for intestinal permeability using a particular sugar test. They then correlated this data with echocardiographic measurements and inflammation. So the investigators were looking for associations between the presence of this pathogenic gut flora and intestinal permeability and heart disease severity and inflammation. They found that the patients with heart failure are more likely to intestinal overgrowth of pathogenic bacteria and candida species. Further, increased intestinal permeability was associated with heart failure severity, venous blood congestion, and inflammation. So, patients with inflammatory bowel diseases, appear to have a higher risk for coronary heart disease, despite a lower prevalence of classical risk factors like cholesterol. Okay, and Dr. Wolfson also talked about similar studies that drew similar conclusions, that chronic heart failure is a multi-system disorder in which intestinal morphology, permeability, and absorption are modified. Increased intestinal permeability and an augmented bacterial biofilm may contribute to chronic inflammation. This is all very, very, very interesting information. So a leaky gut, not just causing allergy, inflammatory bowel disease, irritable bowel syndrome, all of the above, right? Even rashes and things, allergenic potential, histamine reactions, all of that. But now in heart disease, as the inflammation that is contributing to arterial plaque formation, endothelial plaque, the plaque in our coronary arteries, the plaque that you see on a calcium score when you do an EBT heart scan, right? Interesting stuff. Thank you to Dr. Jack Wolfson, cardiologist. And I want to thank you and remind you, again, radioprogram@AOL.com is the destination for questions and topics of interest for me here, so I can weigh in on all of that and all that interests you. Thank you for joining me on another edition of Layla Weighs In here on Intelligent Medicine. This is Layla Mutin, RD. I see patients regularly along with Dr. Hoffman. If you require a nutrition consult with me but live out of town, there's no need to travel to New York City. I have telephone consultations with clients from all over the country. Please visit drhoffman.com for more information. And to set up an appointment, call 212-779-1744. That's 212-779-1744. I look forward to being a collaborator in your healthcare.